Anybody today? I don't want to see all the hands up at the same time. I think that's kind of a funny word that we use as a synonym for anger. We say we're mad at someone. Mad means you're insane. And quite frankly, anger can verge on that kind of loss of balance and loss of control. In fact, the worst kind of anger that we might think of does verge on that. And we're going to be talking about the different kinds of anger that there are. But first of all, we want to even talk about what it is. I did a little research, and besides Mr. Webster, we have also looked at what the text says, both in the Hebrew and the Greek, about these terms. In the Old Testament, there is one word for anger, chawas, which simply means an ordinary anger, the kind that is provoked by a variety of circumstances. And there's another Hebrew word in the Old Testament called off. It's just awful. Just think of it that way, off. And then you'll have the word, because that's the kind of anger that involves explosion. That's the kind of anger that involves a sudden eruption. And there's a similar set in Greek as well. In Greek, we have a word called orge, and that is the ordinary anger. And another word, philos, which is an explosion. And we have these two kinds of burn on the one hand, we have or sudden explosive kind of anger on the other. These are the kinds that we have to deal with. There are other words that we use. Or involvement emotionally, there are one word, ire. It's an old word that very few people use today, although some people do say I'm irked. And another word, though, that is a strong word, which I think, unfortunately, some of us are all too familiar with, is the word rage. The word rage. There are rage-aholics. There are those who have road rage and air rage and all kinds of rage that people are talking about today. And the point being that they are out of control, that their emotions overtake them and overwhelm them. And in that process, they act in such a way that they need to be restrained sometimes. So that is a very serious matter, this matter of rage. And in fact, I know and I think that some of you may know of individuals who are victims of rage-aholism, in the sense that these are individuals who, once their anger is ignited, once if they start to burn, it's like a fuse being lit. It will not go out until it has exploded. And then finally, there will be some sort of relief from that. So it's a horrible condition. And those who are victims of it are those who are going to be hurt by it. So we know that in this room today, I would have to say, I would believe, that there are those who are victims of people's anger and who themselves have had that problem of anger and rage as you have dealt with issues in your own life. There's probably nothing more hurtful than to have someone vent upon you. And I think that we've all had, perhaps at one time or another, that kind of experience. So whether it's rage or fury or the word that is the mildest of all word, indignation, we speak of righteous indignation. Some people use that rather readily when they get upset. I'm not angry, I'm righteously indignant. There are very few occasions when we are truly just righteously indignant, because righteous indignation implies that we are anger on God's behalf. On God's behalf. Whereas ordinary anger is the anger that is, I'm hurt. My feelings have been damaged. I've been crossed. So the question is, who gets the focus? If God gets the focus, then it's righteous indignation. If you get the focus, it's the other kind of anger that we should not be very proud of. So we've talked about these two kinds of anger. That is the slow kind of anger that just festers and just seethes underneath the surface. And by the way, this is a very common issue. In fact, we know that in certain parts of the country, they have what they call feuds. Have you ever heard of a feud? And that means that there are families or individuals who, because they have had something against one another, they continue to be hostile in their treatment of each other, and they find all kinds of excuses to be mean to one another, and sometimes they can even commit violence against one another if they have a fit and feud over a long enough period of time. That certainly would include the Hatfield and McCoys, which we all smile at, but there are people who have members of their own families that they have not spoken to in years and years and decades because of some issue that arose some time ago, and the really tragic thing is that sometimes they can't remember what it was. And yet the feud continues, and the anger and the hostility continues anyway. So we have those kinds of anger, and there are these other two kinds, besides the slow and the explosive kind, that is, there's the godly and there's the ungodly. And the godly kind of anger is anger that we should have. And we're not going to spend time on godly anger because Proverbs doesn't. Proverbs spends time on the other kind, the kind that hurts us and hurts other people. But godly anger is spoken of, for example, in Timothy, where it says to be angry, but sin not. To be angry. One of the things that I think that we find all too little today is anger over evil. That is where there should be righteous indignation. Evil, whether perpetrated by a tyrant, or evil, whether perpetrated by an individual, we should not be those who succumb to the false interpretation. I know the pastor is going to be preaching on this soon. The false interpretation of that passage that says, judge not that you be not judged. And what that often translates into, don't get upset with people even when they do bad things. Because that would be judging. Well, the Bible nowhere says that we're not to discern. The Bible nowhere says that we're not to have a hostile attitude toward evil. We are to expose it, the Bible says. We are to be angry at evil. And we are to have nothing to do with it. That's one of the emotions. That's a helpful emotion. You know, if I am not repelled by evil, I am likely to be drawn into it. And there are behaviors and there are kinds of activities in which I fail to be repelled or to be pushed back, and as a result, I'm vulnerable and open to that very kind of thing. So an anger that leads you to be repelled against evil, or from evil, is a very healthy and helpful kind of emotion to have. But that is not the kind we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the ungodly kind, the fleshly kind of emotion, which, by the way, all kind of revolves around me. All anger revolves around me. It revolves around my feelings. It revolves around my circumstance. It revolves around my imaginary interests and welfare. And when somebody crosses me, when they cross my interests, when they cross my welfare, when they cross my feelings, then I am going to react in a very strong and sometimes very hostile kind of a way. What are some of the causes of anger? Well, I think that it's not hard to find in our own experience reasons why we get angry, why we have gotten angry. But let me give you a couple of passages from the book of Proverbs. Turn to Proverbs chapter 15 for one moment. This may be one of the most common causes of anger in our experience as we deal with one another. And Proverbs addresses it in Proverbs chapter 15. The second line of Proverbs 15:1. A harsh word stirs up anger. A harsh word stirs up anger. I think that there is nothing that can cause the blood to rise in the ears, for the temperature to rise above the forehead level, for something to explode. Nothing can cause that to happen faster than to have someone say a sharp, hot, or unkind, or harsh set of words to you. And I think that the problem is that the people that often succeed in getting under our skin are the people that know us the best, because they know our hot buttons. Now, don't you smile like you know what I'm talking about. They know the areas where we are vulnerable to criticism, where we are where our self-image is threatened. And so when they know that about us, they have a weapon. They have the potential weapon in their hands. And so they begin to hurl invective. They begin to hurl all kinds of words at us that hit us at our points of vulnerability. And it is hard for us to duck. It's hard for us to just let it go off our back, particularly if the person who is saying those harsh words to us is someone that we care about. You can be hurt more by someone who cares about you and that you care about than you can by a stranger, for sure. Strangers can hurt you. It's not true to say that sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never hurt me. That's not true. Because harsh words, whether they're from a stranger or even more particularly when they're from someone that you know and have a close relationship to, can have a devastating effect upon your emotions and can cause you not only hurt, but can cause you a great deal of anger. Why? Because the tendency when somebody comes at you is to do what? Come back at them. And that it is very, very easy to escalate any argument simply by hurling a word, never mind a dish. You can hurl whatever is handy, but words seem to be the handiest. And when the words escalate, so does the argument, because as your words, strong words, go up, so do their strong words go up, and so it goes, and it accelerates. So we know that this is the case, and Proverbs says it here. A harsh word stirs up anger. What else? Well, chapter 14, what people do can cause you to be ticked. Verse 29 of chapter 14 of Proverbs. What people do, not just what they say, but what they do. The second part of verse 29, he who is impulsive, and that here is referring to this sudden behavior that is irrational. He who is impulsive exalts folly. That is, he shows himself to be a fool. And the idea is that the person has acted in such a way that they have shown very little regard for you, for your feelings. They have simply acted in a hurtful kind of way. They have been perhaps neglectful, or they have done something that is directly offensive to you in what they have just done. And the result is their sudden behavior and their sudden expression of this impulsive kind of a mindset causes you to react, because they have set you off and they have ticked you off. There are other words besides ticked off, which I'm not going to use, that are in the colloquial vocabulary, but I think you all understand how it is we can get upset. Something can displease you. It can irritate you. It can irk you. It can annoy you. And any other synonym that you care to use that expresses the fact that this is what's happening to you. In fact, Webster defines anger as a strong feeling of displeasure and usually of antagonism. I think that's about as understated as one could get. Wrath, another word that is used for a very strong level of anger, is defined as strong, vengeful anger. Strong, vengeful anger or indignation. Now, you know, some people say, I don't get mad, I get even. And wrath is a term that describes the tendency to want to get back. I can get back with words, I can get back physically, I can get back by doing something to the person. There are people who get angry because of a broken relationship, and they can do all kinds of things in revenge and cause all kinds of issues to occur out of vengeance. And the Bible speaks to this issue. There is nothing worse than having someone hurt you and hurt you personally, because it sometimes stimulates that kind of a response. Well, anger is a symptom of one thing in particular. Look at chapter 14 of Proverbs in verse 17, Proverbs 14, 17, where it says, a quick-tempered man, that's the very first phrase, acts foolishly. We've already seen that word being used. Foolishness is always contrasted in the book of Proverbs with wisdom. Wisdom is the fear of God. Foolishness is focus on self. Let me repeat that. Wisdom is the fear of God. Foolishness is focus on self. Whenever I focus on me, my feelings, my interests, my circumstances, that focus on self makes me open and vulnerable to this kind of a stimulus, and it makes me into a fool. I mean, I say things that afterwards I have to apologize for. I do things that I have to apologize for. And I say, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I did that. And we have egg on our face, and we are embarrassed by what we have just done or said, and so the result is we're going to have to make things right. We've been foolish. We've been fools as a result of getting into this. Chapter 12 of Proverbs and verse 16, the first part, 12:16 of Proverbs. A fool's wrath is known at once. When an idiot explodes, you know he's an idiot. It's clear that this person is acting like a donkey and that they're behaving foolishly. That's what this text is telling us. Well, these are texts which make it clear to us that if we want to see what anger betokens, understand it betokens foolishness. A foolish person is someone who takes his or her eyes off God and turns his or her eyes on themselves. When you have focused upon yourself, you've become a fool. When you are focusing upon God, then you're wise. And that is the only safeguard against anger, is to focus in the right direction. What are some effects of anger? Well, clearly we've talked about some. One of them, and perhaps the most often, the most frequent effect, is hurt feelings. You know, you do get hurt by words and by names, and not just by sticks and stones. And feelings matter. I think that for many men, for many males, they fail to understand the impact of words and the impact of actions upon women and upon their feelings. And they tend to put that down as somehow weakness or somehow oversensitivity. There's a pejorative way of viewing it, which is not sympathetic. And I think that what that does is to cause long-term hurt and harm to the emotions of the individual involved. By the way, it can go the other way as well. That is to say, there are some women who can become carping critics and direct their language and their criticism at their males in their family, and that can have a very strong and negative effect over time. You've heard of someone being henpecked. Oftentimes that phrase means simply that they have been beaten down verbally, and the result is that the person is angry inside, though they don't show it. They become what's called passive-aggressive sometimes, and they hold it inside, but they show it through their behavior by doing stuff that means, I'm not going to cooperate with you. You may be causing me to be angry, and I may not feel it's safe to express my anger, but I am going to show you, and I show it by resisting. And I do that passively, not necessarily overtly. We know that we either have had it done to us, or we ourselves have been guilty of that when our feelings have been hurt. Besides this matter of hurt feelings, there is the issue of fighting, conflict, strife. Right now we're in a world in which there is conflict and fighting and strife, and it is a result of anger. Anger that is the response, in some cases righteously, anger over evil that has been perpetrated. In other cases, people commit evil and heinous deeds because somebody has crossed them or somebody has gotten in the way of their ambitions. And so their anger is a very personal kind of anger. But foolishness yields oftentimes conflict or strife, contention or discord. And so let's take a look at a couple of passages in this regard in chapter 15 of Proverbs. Chapter 15 of Proverbs, verse 18. 15:18 of Proverbs, especially the first half of the verse, a wrathful man stirs up strife. They are troublemakers. They cause fights to occur and conflict to occur within families, among friends, in a collegial situation, in a work environment. There are people who always seem to be stirring the pot. I hate to think that I can think of examples, but I can. Of people who find a way to either through their criticisms, and through their gossip, through sticking the needle into someone, they are finding ways to penetrate the sense of well-being of the individuals in their immediate vicinity, and the result is they cause difficulty occurring. They cause strife. And one of the worst ways of doing it is to cause one person to cause it with a second person with regard to a third person. And that kind of behavior of gossip, that kind of behavior of creating parties and little cabals of people, you know, we're against her, we're against him, in an office environment or in a home environment where, you know, parents gang up against the kids or the kids gang up against the parents. We have all kinds of strife that occurs as a result of anger because somebody doesn't give me what I want and I get upset over it, and so I'm going to enlist allies. I'm going to create a situation in where I can create a problem for that other person, conflict with that other person in a church setting. There is nothing more harmful. This is, in fact, there is nothing that is more disgraceful to the witness of a church than for a church to be split. And it is so common that church splits have become almost humorous in the minds of some people. Well, it's just another church split because somebody couldn't get along about the color of the walls or the chairs and all of that. And so that's ridiculed as being somehow silly. But it is not silly because it means egos, focus on self, have gotten into the picture. People have reacted based on their own emotions, and the result is, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I'm not going to sit with you anymore. I'm not even going to go to the same church as you go to anymore. And so that kind of behavior ensues, and the result is churches do split, and people split from one another. One of the sad things about marriage in today's world and about relationships in today's world is that the idea of commitment is put to the side and put by the board, as long as I am upset and personally hurt and personally offended. If I'm crossed, then it's okay for me to react, and to react negatively, and even to react vengefully against the person who has crossed. And the issue of commitment goes by the board. That's one of the other effects of conflict in that kind of situation. Another effect of anger is to do wicked and evil kinds of things. Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs chapter 29, where we read what we've just said plus this matter of evil. Proverbs 29, verse 22. An angry man stirs up strife, causes trouble, causes fights. Here it comes. And a furious man abounds in transgression. When I get angry, I do bad things. Oftentimes. And so if I want to have an open door for Satan to get in and to lead me into behaviors that are going to be evil, it's going to often be the result of anger. I've gotten angry with someone who has hurt me. I've gotten angry with someone who has neglected me. And so the result is I do something to get even, to get back, and I do something evil in the process in order to get back. And that is so often the reaction that people have when they are crossed in that way. And so we read, a furious man or a furious woman abounds in transgression, evil. Besides Proverbs 29, you might want to look at Proverbs 19 for a moment. Proverbs 19. This is an interesting one. People who are out of control with regard to their temper, particularly this matter of the rageaholic syndrome that we talked about a moment ago, invariably get into trouble. And there are always people who try to pull them down off the ceiling. And they find that their task is not an easy task. In fact, they find that they usually don't succeed. And now we find out why here. Proverbs 19 and verse 19. A man of great wrath will suffer punishment. He's going to get into trouble. He's going to get himself into trouble. Invariably, his anger is going to lead him to do something that's going to cause others to react. He's going to try to hurt someone. He's going to try to run his car into somebody else. He's going to try to break into somebody's house. That kind of a person is going to get punished because they're going to do things that are illegal, that are immoral, and they're going to do things just to get even. Evil and transgression will be the result of their anger. And by the way, jealousy is a cause, a great cause of anger. Jealousy is perhaps one of the strongest causes of anger. And when there's a passage here which I will not turn to it immediately, which talks about the jealousy of a husband who has been cheated upon, and it says that even if you offer him a bribe, he will not be appeased. His anger will be so deep-seated, his anger will be so furious, that nothing will stave it off. He is going to get even, and he's going to get vengeance because he has been betrayed. And that kind of notion of betrayal, which leads to jealousy, which causes anger, which causes revenge, and that whole thing that we just talked about a moment ago, jealousy is one of the greatest provocateurs of that particular emotion. I don't get mad, I get even, becomes the reaction. James, the book of James in the New Testament, for a moment. Let's turn to the New Testament, the book of James. Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, chapter 1. We said the angry man commits evil, the angry man will get into trouble, the angry man is going to end up in difficulty, getting punished. And we read here in chapter 1 of the book of James, and verse 20, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. That's a profound statement. That we can't do something for God out of a fleshly emotion of revenge, of anger, and even because we feel we are righteously indignant sometimes because we've been hurt or we've been betrayed, we just are feeling wounded. And so we do things and say things to get back, and it never produces good. It only produces harm. Usually the harm is more often to ourselves than it is to the person that we are reacting to. And so that's what this text is telling us when it says, the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. There is no way to get God's business done by venting your spleen. by giving vent to your wrath. That only produces what will feed into Satan's plans. And Satan only wants to sow discord among brethren, the Bible tells us. He is one that always tries to divide husband and wife, parent and child, a friend and friend. He's always wanting to divide. And so that division, divide and conquer, is his method. And the easiest way to create division is to drive the wedge of anger. And anger can come from all those sources that we talked about before. The sudden impulsive behavior, the harsh words, the jealousy. All of these things can get through to us and get under our skin. And the result is that we react. There are examples of anger in the Bible, and I'm not going to turn to this text, but I will allude to it. Do you remember when Moses was taking the people of Israel through the wilderness? There was an incident in which he had been leading them, and he had been used of God to provide all of their needs, whether it was food, the manna from heaven. God gave him that message for the people that he would provide manna, whether it was water, that he would provide that through speaking, for example, to a rock. Well, a time came when the people said, "We're thirsty." And Moses said, "Okay, you want water? I'll get you water." He takes his rod and he whacks the rock. Instead of speaking to it the way God told him to, he vented his anger. And the water came. But God said to Moses, because of that display of anger from that godly leader, he said, "You're not going into the promised land, Moses." For that reason alone, that outburst of anger on Moses' part, which led him to strike the rock instead of speaking to it, because he was venting his spleen, he was upset and ticked with the people. He had every reason to be. But nevertheless, he did not exercise godly patience in that situation or set a godly example in that situation. He simply got upset and whacked the rock. But he suffered a consequence. He suffered a penalty. And I think that that is what often happens, is that we spend oftentimes a good part of our lifetime suffering a penalty and the consequence of our own acts that have come out of our anger and have come out of our hurt and have come out of our desire to get even, to get revenge. And we spend the rest of our lives suffering the consequences of taking action in response to that. Moses is just one example that one can find in Scripture.